Today's podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Gen 40 Heater. Stay warm and save $50 on the Gen 40. Order today at EdenPure.com and use code word Howie Deal. Enjoy the podcast.
Better strap yourself in. It's time for the Howie Carr Show.
First Lady Jill Biden and a member of the T-Birds. I'm not sure if that's John Travolta.
That's Fonzie.
Oh, because I'm the Fonz.
That is the President of the United States, Joe Biden.
What's your gift for Valentine's Day?
Four slices of burnt toast and a rotten egg.
All right, I'll leave you two lovebirds alone.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
Governor Cuomo has become a national leader.
For a lot of people, Andrew Cuomo has become the leader of the Democratic Party.
He is. He's just so dreamy.
He's providing hope, but not false hope.
Governor Cuomo, I think, is one of the heroes on the front lines.
With all of this adulation that you're getting for doing your job, are you thinking about running for president?
I think I'm going to be sick.
Older people, vulnerable people, are going to die from this virus. But who cares?
Rump swabs, hacks, and moon bats beware. It's Howie Carr.
All right, I'm with Joe Piantedosi from Piantedosi Bakery here, and we're going to be leaving after the first break, and guess where we're going for dinner. If you're watching on social media, I'll bet you know because I'm wearing
Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah, we are. And we're going to pretend to be White House reporters. Will you bring us some coffee, Mr. President? Oh, gee, we love your dog so, so much. Those were hard. Those are some of the hard-hitting questions that Dementia Joe faced today on the White House lawn. How pathetic is it? Just, oh, God. Anyway, but so Taylor will be taking over, and he's got some more sound cuts from the state police hearing, including the one where I'm called the B-rated talk show host. I don't know if that means B-rated like I'm Boston Blackie of talk show hosts.
Yeah, I think
or if that means or if it means I'm B-rated like Whitey used to berate me, his other former client. But anyway, we're going to get to that. Joe has got his own radio show, and what do you got coming up, Joe?
This Sunday morning, Valentine's Day, 10 a.m., I have the Platters.
The Platter with group. This ring, I promise.
Yeah, and they have some great songs, Twilight, The Great Pretender.
Now, is this the real Platters? Because when I used to live in the South, there were like 93 different drifters
right,
running around.
Exactly. No. So Herb Reed, I was the main Platter for years, and he passed a few years ago. But as they passed on each Platter, he would replace them with someone that sounded like them. So there's three males and a female, and they have some of the originals that sang with Herb and a couple of newbies. Yeah. And it's a great...
I'll bet you could tell the ones who sang with Herb Reed because they come out in wheelchairs and walkers.
Well, he started in like 1952. That's when the Platters started.
Yikes.
So, but the newer breed did not start that long. So, but they're still great. Actually, they did a Marvel song for that new Marvel show that's Pixar and Marvel show.
So you'll have them on. Where do people get your show?
North Shore 104.9 FM. You can live stream it directly on the dial, North Shore 104.9, or you can even go to podcast the next day. North Shore, local radio, North Shore 104.9.
All right. Okay, that sounds good, Joe. We'll be listening. Might as well do the poll question now, Taylor. How'd you like to keep an extra $961 a year in your pocket? That's how much Gabby customers save per year on average on car and home insurance. See how much Gabby can save you at Gabby.com/Howie, Gabby.com/Howie. Taylor, what's the poll question? What are the results thus far?
Will Andrew Cuomo or anyone at the Lincoln Project face criminal consequences?
No, unfortunately not.
88% say no.
Right. 844-500-4242. I just want to spend the last couple of minutes that I'm on the show here today talking about this Cuomo situation here. This is just, you know, as bad as this is, it's almost as bad that the mainstream media is just giving this a complete pass, except for the New York Post and Fox News and talk radio. I mean, the CNN, MSNBC, the New York Times, they would rather pretend that this is a real trial going on with the in the Senate. And, oh, oh, this is so breathtaking, and this is so important and historic. No, it's not. It's like professional wrestling. You know the outcome. This is outrageous what they did. They covered it up. They said they were afraid. Cuomo's secretary, his top aide, said yesterday or the day before to a bipartisan legislative group that they did not give out the true numbers about nursing home deaths in August, even though the legislature had demanded it and had a right to see it, because they were afraid of being ensnared in a criminal investigation. They called it a political football, but what they meant was a criminal investigation. It is just outrageous. Elise Stefanik, you know her. She's the congresswoman from upstate New York. She said, Governor Cuomo, the secretary to the governor, that's the woman who made the confession, and his senior team must be prosecuted immediately, both by the Attorney General of New York State and the U.S. Department of Justice. This bombshell admission of a cover-up, that's a good word too, cover-up, and I would also add obstruction of justice. And the remarks by the secretary to the governor indicating intent to obstruct any federal investigation is a stunning and criminal abuse of power. Do we have any teases running on CNN about what Chris Cuomo is going to be talking about tonight on his show? I'm sure he'll be all over this one like flies on you know what, as they say. God, 844-500-4242. I love the quote from the liberals. I always love it when the liberals turn on their own here. Assembly Health Committee Chairman Richard Gottfried, Democrat, Manhattan, immediately rejected the secretary DeRosa's expression of remorse. You know what the remorse was, Joe?
What was it?
The remorse wasn't for the people in the nursing homes. The remorse was to the people in the legislature who had opponents and were having to fight off Republican challengers.
How true.
So we do apologize. I do understand the position you were put in, meaning being challenged in the election. I know that is not fair. It was not our intention to put you in that political position with the Republicans. Could you have said anything, any condolences? Any sympathies for the survivors of the 15,000 people you killed in the nursing homes?
Getting an Emmy.
Crickets, please. So thank you. So this is State Rep Richard Gottfried, Democrat, Manhattan. He's the chairman of the Health Committee. I don't have enough time today to explain all the reasons why I don't give that any credit at all. He was one of the people who was demanding the real records, and they stonewalled him, a Democrat, a pablum-puking Democrat from the borough of Manhattan. He couldn't even get an answer out of these frauds.
Let's not forget who's really at fault here. That's Roger Stone.
That's true. That's who they blamed, isn't it? They blamed Roger Stone for this. Yeah.
At least New Yorkers tonight can go out to dinner and sit down in a restaurant. That starts tonight, by the way.
That's great news.
20% occupancy.
20% occupancy.
Yeah, it was supposed to be Sunday, and then Governor Cuomo decided to up it two nights to give people a little break for Valentine's Day.
Well, you know what happened last weekend in Massachusetts? The restaurant said, Charlie, can you open it up so we can be open on Super Bowl Sunday to maybe get a little extra business in?
Well, you had to leave those.
And he said no.
You had to leave if you did go 75 minutes, so you couldn't even watch. That wouldn't give you the halftime if you.
Right.
But anyway.
Right. But he wouldn't let them open because that's the way it was. I mean, he did the same. This is how it started on St. Patrick's Day. Please, Governor, can you leave it open for St. Patrick's Day? We've ordered all this corned beef hash. Right. We poured the green crap in the beer. You know, please, we've got all this cabbage is going to go bad. No, it's going to be shut down immediately. Right. So he pulls the same crap with the Super Bowl on the way out. Anyway, 844-500-4242. But you're right, it was Roger Stone's fault. Roger Stone's fault. And just like the California labor secretary, who's now going to be working for Marty Walsh, billions of dollars in fraud in California. Prisoners, illegal aliens, cyber criminals all over the world are getting unemployment payments from California. And you know whose fault it is? Donald Trump's. That's what she said. It's Donald Trump's fault that all this fraud took place.
Everybody's always blaming me for everything.
He didn't give them guidance. He didn't fly out to Sacramento and tell them how to spot a scammer. You know, like they let one scam. There were 1,000 in unemployment application forms out of one address. They didn't catch that because Trump didn't tell them. It's Trump's fault. All right. Okay, I'm going to tell him this if I see him tonight, Joe. If we see him tonight, we're going to let him know that we're tired of this fraud that he allowed to take place in the Golden State. All right. I got to do this one spot, and then we'll be heading out. But have a good weekend, everybody. Happy Valentine's Day to all. Hit refresh on your dinner routine with HelloFresh. Right now, you can take advantage of a new limited-time offer and see why HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit. HelloFresh gives you simple recipes and fresh ingredients, sourced directly from growers and delivered to your door contact-free. With more than 23 weekly recipes, there's something for everyone to enjoy, including family-friendly, vegetarian, and low-calorie options. Go all out for Valentine's Day with gourmet or globally inspired recipes to cook as a couple, or dig into the latest Kraft burger with the family. I recommend the Kraft burgers.
They're Did you also have the taquitos? Did you eat those?
I did have those. Those are the pork tacos. They were delicious, as a matter of fact.
They
were much
great.
Better
I think
than
we I, tweeted out that picture, too.
They were fantastic. I recommend those, too, as well. I've never had a bad meal with HelloFresh. They're all good. Say hello to never-ending meal planning and prepping, and hello to new 10 to 20-minute meals, low-prep recipes, quick breakfasts, and lunches. And they give you, if you've only got a couple of people living in the house, you can get 2-3 meals out of the HelloFresh recipe. So they really are a good buy. HelloFresh recipe cards are easy to follow with simple steps and pictures so you can get meals on the table in less than 30 minutes. Plus, by skipping the grocery store, you can save 40% on groceries, cut food waste by 25%, and stop overbuying. You won't have to deal with all those Karens in the grocery stores either telling you to put on your mask.
Doesn't happen down here in Florida, though.
No, it doesn't. Thank goodness. Thank you, Ron DeSantis. Go to HelloFresh.com and use code Howie10 for 10 free meals, including free shipping for a limited time only. Just go to HelloFresh.com and use code Howie10 for 10 free meals. HelloFresh.com. I'll see you Monday.
Howie, wouldn't it be a great Valentine's gift? I think the
Kennedy Babylon. It is.
It's pink, too, so I think
HowieCarshow.com. Click on store. Great gift. 2-for-1. Thank you, Joe Piantedosi.
Happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
See you later. I'm Howie Carr.
Don't touch that dial. Howie Carr will be back after this.
I can still teach you a few, kid. You're just a tin horn thug and you always will be. You haven't got the guts to be anything else.
The Howie Carr Show.
Welcome back to the Howie Carr Show. Howie has taken the slide to Mar-a-Lago with Joe Piantedosi, and we wish them a very nice hearty dinner and hope they see President Trump down there. We're going to get to all of the Brian Erickson stuff after 6:30, but I did want to continue on with some of the Andrew Cuomo sound that we've played over the past few months as this glorious leader in New York has really done a bang-up job, and I sincerely mean that, a bang-up job. He's really banged up this one. I like what Howie said at the outset of the show, Andy lied, Grandma died, because that is what happened. There's no getting around that now. I can believe how pompous this guy was, actually. I can believe it, because I think we knew it all along, didn't we? We knew that this guy was being a sleaze about the whole thing. It was way, way too overconfident about himself and, you know, joked around with the reporters. He was just, any time a reporter started to sniff around and question him, it was a snippy remark right back to them. Just like Joe Biden, whenever somebody sniffs around him, usually he's the one doing the sniffing, but I'll back off of that for now. Whenever somebody sniffs out a story around him, he said to Peter Ducey, boy, you're a one-horse pony. Or a one-pony horse, whatever he said. But just looking at Cuomo, he really, really got arrogant with a lot of these people, especially when it came out that the numbers could have been underreported through this, I believe it was the Attorney General or the federal report that came out about the numbers in the nursing home deaths. This was cut 19. I'm sorry, Matt. Cut 18.
Look, whether a person died in a hospital or died in a nursing home, it's the people died. People died.
So it doesn't matter, again, to Andrew Cuomo, it doesn't matter where somebody got sick. It's that they got sick. It was probably going to happen. It doesn't matter where they got sick. Yet his policies wouldn't tell you that. They closed down all of New York, right? Bill de Blasio shut down New York City, except he could go to the gym if he wanted to. I'm sure it was Andrew Cuomo shut down all of New York, except he was going to have grandma over for Thanksgiving, his mother over for Thanksgiving, until the press picked up on that, and he had to call his mom, and he was back to the least favorite son because he had to disinvite his own mother from Thanksgiving. Meanwhile, all of us, I'm sure, made some sort of sacrifice at least one of these holidays before we discovered what the great ruse was, and that was that Andrew Cuomo was lying the entire time. Let's move on to cut 19.
A third of all deaths in this nation are from nursing homes. New York State, we're only about 28% only, but we're below the national average in number of deaths in nursing homes. But who cares? 33, 28 died in a hospital, died in a nursing home. They died.
See, did you catch it at the beginning of that clip? He let the cat out of the bag without letting the cat out of the bag. He kind of backtracked it a little bit. He said only 23% only, or only 28% only, as if to say, oh, that number does matter. But he didn't care. He did not care about the number. He knew the number was not going to stand at that number forever because he was hiding these numbers. Let's go to the supercut here, because those were some of the most outrageous remarks that he made during this whole thing about people dying in nursing homes and him being responsible for it, not wanting to take responsibility, except for the fact that he actually blamed Roger Stone for some reason. Roger Stone, I guess, started the pandemic, whatever. Ridiculous. But this is, as one New Yorker, Robert Barone of the New York Police Department, would say, everybody loves Cuomo.
Cuomo's press conferences, daily briefing. How would you contrast Cuomo and President Trump's handling of the crisis?
Truth versus mendacity.
Governor Cuomo out there day after day after day, everything Trump isn't. Honest, direct, brave.
Real leadership of the kind the President of the United States should have provided.
Governor Cuomo is clearly living in a totally different reality, the actual one, than the President of the United States.
Governor Cuomo has become a national leader.
For a lot of people, Andrew Cuomo has become the leader of the Democratic Party.
He is conveying incredible strength.
You spoke to National Guard troops today in a stirring speech that, if I wasn't listening carefully, I thought you were sending soldiers off to war.
Oh, this has been a remarkable show of leadership by Governor Cuomo in recent days. He's providing hope, but not false hope.
Governor Cuomo, I think, is one of the heroes on the front lines.
With all of this adulation that you're getting for doing your job, are you thinking about running for president?
Andrew Cuomo, who has a daily television show now and has become in some ways the shadow president.
Maybe Trump is just a little bit mad that Governor Cuomo has become a kind of acting president.
Dealing with hardship actually makes you stronger. That's what Governor Cuomo said earlier today. That's what I'm going to go teach my kids right now at home.
Where does his publisher go to get their money back on that pile of garbage that he wrote? Can't believe people actually bought it. I cannot believe people actually bought it. I'm with Janice Dean. He should resign. All right, folks, we're going to get into the Brian Erickson bail hearing that took place today. Part two. If you were listening yesterday, you heard all of part one. Today was part two, and it's still not done. We'll be back right after this break. I'm Taylor Cormier, filling in for Howie Carr. This is the Howie Carr Show.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
Welcome back to the Howie Carr Show. Howie is headed to Mar-a-Lago for dinner tonight. So we are finishing up. I'm Taylor Cormier, filling in for Howie. Matt is on the board. And today was part two of the evidentiary bail hearing for State Trooper Sergeant Brian Erickson of Massachusetts. If you're just tuning in, the story is basically this. He was arrested after his girlfriend called the police on him. He had shown up to her house earlier that night on January 30th. She lives in Exeter, New Hampshire. He's married. He's been married for some years now. And this, I believe this affair had been going on for 9 years. He's got his oldest kid is 5 years old. He's got one, I believe, 1 year old as well. So this took place January 30th. He allegedly showed up to her home. Somebody wanted to break something off. There's been, you know, stories that it was a mutual breaking up, but it somehow turned violent where he ended up grabbing her wrists, pushing her on the bed, and preventing her from calling 911. In the process, throttled her, grabbed her face, headbutted her. That's what we heard in court yesterday from the prosecution. Now, and from a Detective Mulholland who was assigned to this case. Now, today we're going to hear more from the defense, talking to Detective Mulholland about what transpired that night. The defense, as Howie has mentioned, also defended Whitey Bulger when he was on trial for a number of murders. His name is Hank Brennan, and he went back to asking Detective Mulholland some questions today, and that's where we left off. So I'll let you know that Hank Brennan, he gets into a little bit of the weeds, and you're going to hear him do what defense lawyers do, which is try to cast some doubt onto what the prosecution was trying to get at, and that was that Sergeant Erickson was the aggressor here and injured, or at least, on the surface, gave some injury to this younger and much smaller woman. So Hank Brennan is trying to put some doubt onto that. Remember, keep in mind, this is not a trial yet, okay? This is just a bail evidentiary hearing. So first, Hank Brennan, he tries to frame Sergeant Erickson's grabbing of the victim's wrists as a defensive move. This is cut one.
Yesterday, you were talking about the act of somebody grabbing somebody's wrists, correct?
Yes.
And as a detective, a police officer, isn't that a defensive posture to restrain someone by their wrists?
It certainly could be.
It's different than striking somebody, isn't it?
Yes.
It's different than punching them or kicking them, correct?
Yes.
And as an officer, you're trained to use the least amount of force necessary under the circumstances, correct?
Yes.
And if someone is punching you, in your experience, grabbing their wrists is, other than running away, the least amount of force possible, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if it's the exact least amount of force, but certainly that would be an appropriate amount of force.
So yesterday, Hank Brennan objected to one of the statements by the prosecution trying to lead Detective Mulholland into saying that Sergeant Erickson used police training tactics in order to take down this woman and attack her, allegedly. But here he is today saying that those motions could have been defensive brought on by his training. So already he's kind of contradicting himself. He also tried to minimize the victim's injuries. There were pictures that we'll put up on HowieCarshow.com very soon, possibly over the weekend, where you can see the bruising on the legs and arms of this woman that Sergeant Erickson is alleged to have attacked. But Sergeant Hank Brennan, Attorney Hank Brennan, tries to minimize those injuries. It's cut two.
Did you see any pictures of any bruises or welts on her face?
I wouldn't categorize what I saw as that. I saw one photo of her face, neck area, and I noted that under her chin and along her neck were red.
According to the detectives or the officers in their police report, their summary of so-called injuries was minor scratches, right?
I don't specifically recall that, but I think that's consistent, sir.
But the pictures do speak for themselves. While this wasn't a brutal alleged attack, there was some discoloration of the arms and legs that would be consistent with bruising from what I could see. Now, yesterday we also heard from Detective Mulholland and the prosecution that Sergeant Erickson was seen on at least one occasion, allegedly, by the victim. She had gone out on a date. This is before January 30th, the night in question, as it's referred to. She was out on a date with somebody else, and she saw somebody through the window taking pictures of her and this man she was on a date with, and somebody else in the house also saw that there was somebody outside. They went outside to see who that was. The person had already fled, but there was a hat hanging on a security light, like one of those, you know, over the garage floodlights that on a motion sensor. And the victim recognized it as potentially being Sergeant Erickson's hat. So yesterday, Sergeant Erickson was painted as the stalker. Today, it is the victim who's the stalker. Cut three.
Did you ever talk to her about her going over to the family home on October 6th at 2:30 in the morning to confront his wife?
No, I was not aware of that at the time. I did ask her. We had a discussion about whether or not, you know, she ever told his wife. She indicated that she told his wife once or twice about this affair.
Did she ever tell you about driving by the house day and night, taking pictures and then emailing or texting them?
No.
Strange behavior, if true. But yesterday, Sergeant Erickson was the stalker. Today, it's the victim. I try to be fair in these cases because, again, the prosecution and the defense, they both deserve a fair shake. Unlike Howie will tell you who's going to be guilty in this, I'm not going to tell you. I don't know. I can guess, but I'm not going to tell you. So then we get to the victim, according to Hank Brennan, had made some statements that she had wanted to take down Erickson. She was jealous of him. He was jealous of her. This came to a head, obviously, on January 30th. But cut four here tells us that she may have had some plans to take this guy down. Cut four.
During your investigation, that before this complaint by the complaining witness, she was telling Danny and his wife, friends of hers, that she was planning on ruining his life, Mr. Erickson's life?
I recall reading that. I wasn't aware of that until after I interviewed her.
So after all of this, Hank Brennan goes into really nitty-gritty details about video interviews that Detective Mulholland conducted with the victim. Starts talking, you know, giving quotes out of context, asking if he remembers if she said this at a specific time. Of course, the guy doesn't have the video to reference right in front of him. He's at a bail hearing that's not really afforded to him yet. So the judge finally interjects, and this will be one of Howie's favorite cuts from the day here, when he plays these on Monday, possibly. This is cut five of the judge Honigberg reminding where Hank Brennan is right now. Cut five.
I'm going to overrule the objection, understanding that we're Mr. Brennan is exploring the merits of this case in quite a bit of depth. And I'm sure that he has a good reason for doing that in a bail hearing. that I will hear about later. But I will remind counsel that we are in a bail hearing and are not going, I'm not going to be making a finding of guilty or not guilty at the end of this hearing.
So, and yeah, it went on for 3 hours today. I sat through 2 hours yesterday, 3 hours today, and then cutting all that stuff up. But I want to tell you, there were people texting Howie yesterday saying, what are you spending time on this for? I want to, do you know how rare an occasion this is? I used to cover court stuff back in my previous job, and Howie can tell you the same thing. It's very rare that you get this kind of hookup. Where you get audio from everybody, where you can see the evidence as it's being presented. Again, this is just a bail hearing, but the audio is never this good. There's usually some pool reporter in there that's collecting the sound, if you're even allowed. And even then, the sound's probably not going to be that good. You're either going to get the prosecution, the defense, or the judge, or maybe whoever's on the witness stand. The sound is never going to be this good. So just like the Democrats say with the whole coronavirus thing, never let a good crisis go to waste. Never let a good bail evidentiary hearing go to waste. So this is the part I really got interested in because we didn't hear about it much yesterday, and so we started to hear about it today. This was the, upon arrival of the police to the victim's home, they, in the police report, stated that they saw Mr. Erickson or a man leaving the house through the back of the garage or the back of the house, presumably running through some woods behind there to his truck, which he had parked some ways away. So now we're going to get into how the police eventually caught up with him. This is, I believe, Sergeant Devin West of the Exeter Police Department. And this is what happened when he arrived at the scene. Cut six.
When I arrived, got out of the cruiser and met with Officer Chase, who had knocked on the door to the residence. A female had come out as soon as I got there. I arrived at about the same time Officer Sheehy arrived right behind me. And she stated that she came out and asked what was going on. She stated that her crazy boyfriend, now ex-boyfriend, had just grabbed her face and threw her down, and he took off out the back.
So, based on that information, the very smart police officers presumed that, and they asked her that where he could have gone, and she told them probably to his vehicle, which he parks at this convenience store just behind the house here, through some woods and across the road. So, they started going over there. And we have images now of him getting into and leaving his truck, which was parked at the convenience store. And when the police saw a vehicle matching the description of the one that the victim gave them, they activated their lights. Here's what happened. Cut seven from Sergeant Devin West.
Once I turned my lights on, the vehicle continued at a high rate of speed down Linden Street, and I just attempted to catch up to it.
Did it appear to accelerate?
It did.
And what's the speed limit on that road?
That road right there is a 25.
And were you able to catch up to the vehicle on that road?
I was not.
So it's a curvy road. This officer happened to be in a Ford Expedition or Ford Explorer, rather, not the big Expedition, the Ford Explorer. He wasn't comfortable going around the turns at such a high rate of speed. So he drove as fast as he could without turning the cruiser over. Cut eight.
I was driving a Ford Expedition, and I didn't feel comfortable going around bends at a high rate of speed in that thing.
So is it safe to say you were driving as fast as you felt you could safely go?
Yes, I was.
Cut nine.
When you say you accelerated to see if you could find where the vehicle had gone on Court Street, how fast would you say you were going?
I was going over 60 miles an hour.
And what's the speed limit on that road?
That's a 40.
And you didn't see anything?
I didn't see anything. There's no lights, no taillights or anything, nothing.
Were there any cars out at that time?
There wasn't.
Nothing. Guy was doing 60 on this. The cop was doing 60 trying to catch up to this guy, and he still couldn't find him. We'll play the last cut, cut 10, before we go to the break. Cut 10.
What did you do after you called off the chase?
I let dispatch know, and they updated they put out a bolo to stop. I just verified with Officer Chase that an assault had occurred so that we could do the 12-hour stop and arrest. I just wanted to verify with her everything before we put that out.
So it wasn't Exeter Police that eventually caught up with him. I believe it was State Police that caught up, New Hampshire State Police that caught up with Sergeant Brian Erickson. So we did not hear from them in the bail evidentiary hearing, but they did want to get the take on the initial responses to this scene. We'll get into the closing statements. You don't want to miss this. Some good stuff here from both sides. We'll get into it right after the break. I'm Taylor Cormier, filling in for Howie Carr. This is the Howie Carr Show.
You might want to keep a close eye on your fried clams. Howie Carr returns after this.
Yum, yum, yum.
Got hate mail?
You bloated idiot! You stupid fathead, you!
Send it to Grace at HowieCarShow.com.
All right, we've got limited time here, so we're going to do closing statements, abbreviated though they may be, from the prosecution first, then the defense. Here's the prosecution. Cut 14.
He repeatedly hangs up on her calling for assistance, and she makes clear the last time, the third try, that she is calling the police, and he's preventing that actively. A police officer actively preventing her from calling help.
Cut 19.
With someone who has a history of other prior strangulations, as alleged in Topsfield, Massachusetts, with prior jealousy, with access to firearms, someone who has made prior threats to the victim, and the facts within this case, Judge, someone who was not a law enforcement officer would be held. They would be held without bail on preventative detention. The fact that this person is a law enforcement officer is not a mitigating fact. It is an aggravating one.
Back to the defense. Cut 27.
She said she was going to ruin his life. Well, that's exactly what is happening. He's a Mass State police officer. He's a big fish. The embarrassment, the shame, the target he has, it's shared by the government. It's shared by both. They know he's vulnerable just because he gave to the community for 10 years as an officer and because he was in the military serving his country.
All right. We don't have any time to play anything else from the defense, although I'd like to. We did play the B-rated talk show host cut before. But here's the judge with his final decision. Turns out it wasn't so final. He said, I'm going to have to review some things over the weekend. Poor Mr. Brian Erickson. You're going to have to stay in jail for the weekend now. Valentine's Day is Sunday. Oh, he's going to be such a lonely guy. Cut 30.
Unfortunately, Mr. Erickson, I'm not going to make a decision this afternoon. You're going to have to wait the weekend where you are before knowing whether I'm going to accept your lawyer's arguments about what to do. So I will go through the record. I'll try and issue something as quickly as I can. I will try to do it over the weekend. So.
Can't see his wife, he can't see his girlfriend, he can't see his other girlfriend that I guess he has. He threatened to have sex with another woman that night. All right, have a great weekend. Happy Valentine's Day. I'm Taylor Cormier, filling in for Howie Carr.